Hello and welcome to another episode of The Code of Career with me, your host, Cameron Blackrod. Today's guest is Helen Kent. Helen is my colleague at Purple Bricks. We actually work together on the front end team, and she joins us today to share her insights from going from a career in teaching to a career in web development. We discuss the trials and tribulations of having to leave a previous career to start a new one and the mental toll that can take, as well as public policy around education and how we can encourage more kids to take a career in STEM. If you're thinking about switching your career or in your process of doing that, then this could be a great episode for you to check out and to understand more about the process and what we've learned from going through that experience ourselves. It's a great episode, if I do say so myself, and I hope you enjoy. Today's episode of The Code of Career is brought to you by the Zero to Mastery Academy. Zero to Mastery hosts a number of great courses, whether you're trying to get your first job in tech or you're a tech lead trying to level up some of your skills. If you're still learning to code, I really recommend their original Zero to Mastery web developer course. If you've already learned and you're working already, I'm currently undertaking a junior to senior one and it's fantastic. They also as well have a new Next.js course, which I'm keen on checking out. It's great value at $23 a month, and you can get 10% off by following my link in the description and using my code FRIENDS10. Anyway, on with the show. Hi, Helen. Thanks so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm very well. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'm good. So for listeners who may not be familiar with yourself, do you want to give a bit of a brief introduction to who you are? And obviously we work together at Purple Bricks, but a bit about that as well.
Yeah, another Purple Bricks person. yes, I'm Helen. I've worked at Purple Bricks for just over a year now. Before that, I was a primary school teacher for just about 10 years. I really enjoyed that for quite a long time, but then it just started not being an enjoyable role anymore, and like there was just no life, and I just started kind of trying to think of different things I could do, like a career change. And I'd always been quite techie, and I started looking for boot camps and looking at Code Academy and things like that. Then I found the School of Code boot camp, which was brilliant, and it's a boot camp that has originally started in Birmingham but is just about to go national in quite a few different counties. But it's a free boot camp and it's 16 weeks full stack JavaScript React. So I discovered that and was immediately sort of super really excited. So I applied for that. I did that boot camp, started in January 2020. So we had 2 months of it being in Digbeth in the Custer factory, which was really cool altogether. And then COVID hit, so we had to go remote halfway through it. Which was a bit of a pain in the bum, but it was actually pretty good for us because we got a chance to have a go at working remote. So I think that's had a really good impact on, it's been really quite beneficial because I had a chance to try working remote and discovered I actually liked it, whereas I didn't think I ever would. During that time, we kind of finished the bootcamp. I had a job at a place called Cyber Owl for about 3 months, I think. But that was like a QA role, QA and DevOps. It didn't suit me. I'm not a QA person. And then the job at Purple Bricks came up and I'd met the head of engineering, Tom, at Brum.js a fair few months before. And we just hit it off and had a really good chat. Like networking is just the way to go. And I chatted to him quite a few different times and he told me about the role. So I applied and I've been here since then and just really enjoyed it. So I'm still a junior, but coming towards the end of like my junior time-ish.
Fantastic. That sounds great. And definitely echo that sentiment on networking. It's the most powerful tool in a developer's toolbox. And whenever I say that, people think I'm talking about like literal networking in terms of like how computers network. I'm like, no.
I don't know that.
Personal networking. Yeah, me neither. We're more front-end developers, us. But so just so the listeners can get to know you a little bit more as well, what I like to do is run through some quick-fire questions. These are often ones that I've gone through before with other guests, so we can always compare and contrast, which is always quite a fun little exercise. So the first one of those is the classic. What was your first computer?
Well, I kind of would consider, like, there's two of them. I remember when my dad first came home with these giant boxes. I've got no idea when it was, and that was like the first computer that we had in the house. And I remember like when we eventually got internet and like the ding 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 ding, ding all like the internet like noises. But my first actual like personal one was this Advent laptop, and it was, I don't know, like maybe 3 to maybe 4 centimeters thick and so heavy. And I like absolutely loved it. Took it to university. Like it really wasn't the most portable thing. It was so heavy. It fell down the stairs once, didn't break. I think I dropped a table on it, didn't break. That got me through uni, and I absolutely loved that one. So yeah, my old chunky Advent laptop.
They don't make them like they used to. I remember those days in the mid 2000s, just trying to carry around a laptop and basically having to be an Olympic weightlifter.
Yeah.
But they were durable. It's like the old phones as well. Like I'm terrified of dropping my MacBook because it's just so thin. I'm just scared of damaging it. But
Yeah, there's no
yeah,
stopping that.
I yeah. The only ones that have stayed like that are like ThinkPads and that kind of thing. They're still really thick. But yeah, I guess portability is important as well, though. Not so much over the past 18 months, but hopefully we'll be able to
And
take our
just
laptops out and about
aesthetics,
more.
like it was ugly. It
Yeah.
doesn't have the MacBook shine, let's say.
Yeah. And in terms of, I mean, obviously we've talked a little bit about Birmingham already and the Custard Factory. What's your favorite Czech city?
I probably should say Birmingham because of like, BrumJS and all that lot, but I'm just not. I went on a road trip to California with my partner in 2019, and we were in San Francisco for a little while, and we were going to see the 49ers play, which is like a fair trip away from actual San Francisco, like city. And so while we were there, we also like did the pilgrimage to like Google, Facebook, Apple. I stood by the Facebook sign, and it's actually like the Sun Microsystems sign behind it that they've just turned around and reused. And I just really like how exciting that felt, so I'm going to say that. And we went to the have you seen that the Apple like the headquarters, the new big
Oh, the giant
circle one?
circle, the
Yeah.
infinity loop or whatever it
And
is.
there's like a guest there's a guest place you can go to, and they like give you I there's like a model of it. They give you iPads, and you can like hold it up and then see how like what it's like on the inside. It's very exciting, very
That
sleek.
is cool. Yeah, I'd love to get out to Silicon Valley. I think I went to the West Coast States once, but I was so small I'd never remember it. But
Yeah.
yeah, I'd love to get out there and sort of check out the scene because obviously it's where everything starts. And
Exactly.
yeah, I love the UK tech scene, especially up here in Scotland. But our Silicon Glen is great, but I'd love the Silicon Valley.
Yeah. And we went to Google as well, and you can like walk around, and they've got this little garden, and I ate a little tomato out the Google garden, the Google veg garden.
I was going to say, have you still got it? But I guess it's a, I was going to say it's a vegetable, but actually, no, it's a fruit, isn't it? It's weird, those giant headquarters where it's just like a university campus.
Yeah.
We don't really have those in the UK, at least not to my knowledge.
yeah
Many of
we
those.
should
Yeah, personally, I like working from home, but it'd be good to have a big campus with loads of stuff for free every now and again that I could swan over
yeah
to.
definitely I'd be up for that.
And what about when you're getting down to some code? What kind of music do you like to listen to?
Sometimes I'm a bit weird and just forget to put any on.
Wow,
I
silence
know.
when coding.
Yeah. Like it takes I need no distractions. But then other times I try and listen to things with words, but then I get distracted. So I'm a big S Club 7 fan. Listened to a bit of that recently. But it has to be something like without words. I usually type in like concentration music, or I've got a lo-fi playlist that I listen to that like is a fail safe. Go back to that quite a lot.
Nice. Yeah, lo-fi is always a good one for listening. I find I'm the same. It has to be something without too many lyrics. I've tried the whole podcast thing, but then you either end up drifting into the podcast or you're drifting into the code and you don't hear
Yeah.
the podcast. And yeah, a lot of the time it's just just has to be lo-fi. I agree. And when do you find you do the work? Would you say you're an early bird or a night owl?
I am absolutely categorically not an early bird. Never have been, never will. I'd love to be, just never will be. I'm a night person.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm getting better. And weirdly, working from home has actually helped with that, because I get a clear bit of time before sort of doing it, doing anything. But yeah, I, as much as I would love to be sort of 5 a.m. club, I don't think it's in me.
Nope, me either.
And obviously, we talked about you're a fellow career changer. I changed my careers as well to being a software engineer. Back in the, back when you were a kid, though, what was your dream job? What did you want to be?
The only thing I remember ever wanting to do was own a sweet shop.
I love that. That's great. Like just like a high street one, or like full on Willy Wonka chocolate factory?
No, just like just probably my own one, so that I could eat the sweets. I remember like trying to make chocolate covered raisins. That's all I did. Just made those. Thought that could be like the big seller in for my sweet shop. So yeah, it wasn't successful, unfortunately. But I'm quite happy where I am now.
Very nice. That's definitely one of the cooler jobs. Someone said. I think I'll be happy in a sweet shop, but I think I'd end up with diabetes. I have no self control.
Yeah, it's a good job. I'm not a sweet shop owner.
In terms of getting into tech, you mentioned always being interested in computers, but going into teaching. Mm-hmm. How did you find yourself on? I guess it's a kind of longer answer to the question, but how did you end up on the path where you are today, now becoming a software engineer? I hope you don't mind as well, but I stalked your LinkedIn. I saw you have a bit of a background in computing before even becoming a teacher as well.
Exactly, from my degree.
Yeah, from your degree. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's probably good to like talk about that part, because I went to Loughborough University and did computing and management, because that's what I always wanted to do. I did IT as it was then, or ICT at GCSE and A level. Computers were always completely my thing. That's just what I loved. And then thought like I would have a job doing that. But then when I was at uni, it was like 2002, 2006. I don't think I wasn't well suited to it, or it was rubbish. But like all the coding parts of it were just kind of, you had like a lecture, they were up at the front telling you about code. No one took their laptops in. So a few of them, it was hard to understand. So I was like trying to decipher what they were saying at the same time as like learning what Java was. And I think it was so difficult. I just think I completely switched off. And it just didn't feel accessible, and I didn't feel like I could do it. So then just kind of started thinking like, well, I'm clearly no good. I clearly can't do any of this. It's just not right for me. What can I do instead? And then did a PGCE. I had a year out as well. I had a year out at Hewlett-Packard in like the events team. And just didn't really enjoy that either. So then just started thinking about teaching and did my PGCE. And like that was really well suited to me for quite a long time, because like, it was meaningful and it was fun, and you're also kind of teaching along with all your friends as well. So like it was brilliant for a long time, and then things just started to change, and it got to the point where you could either be a really great teacher and be really rubbish at life, like have no personal life, or you could have a really good personal life, look after your like family, see your friends, but you'd actually be a really rubbish teacher because you can't do both. And I just started kind of going back to like I should have like learnt to code and all that kind of stuff. And by that point, which was I suppose when I started thinking about it more, was where are we now, like maybe 3-4 years ago, there was more popping up on the internet, like we've got Code Academy, Free Code Camp, and it was more accessible, and also you could see more women doing it. I think the more you see, the more you kind of think that's actually for you. So like back at uni, I was one of really not many people on my not many women on my course, and so like seeing all that on the internet, having more opportunities to learn, seeing that it was possible, and then seeing that there was a boot camp that like I could save up a bit of money, quit my job, do that for 4 months, like that just, it was too good an opportunity not to go for, so I went for it, and I like, felt quite brave to do that. I was really pleased I did, but it's worked out so well.
It's such a scary moment. I remember, I imagine you're probably the same, that day when you hand in your notice and you know you're not going to another job. You know you're going to a, I'd already kind of half learnt to code. I was in a weird point where I'd had an internship, but it wasn't quite enough. And so I went to an 8-week kind of React specific course camp thing. And yeah, it was scary going into that and thinking, right, I'm going to give up my salary for a while. And I don't know how long for.
I know. It was just so exciting. And I think the fact with School of Code is as well, because you're not paying them, they're getting their money from when you get a job. So they have to help you get a job. So they get their money. It just kind of was a bit more fail safe. And also, I could always go back to teaching like supply if I had to. So there was that like safety net as well.
Mm. It's a very interesting model that School of Code operate. So they, if I have it right, they charge companies basically based on hiring their alumni, or
They have. I think they have people help you find a job through that, and they also have sponsorship. So companies have sponsored them. The West Midlands Combined Authority gave them a bit of money for, well, I don't know how many thousands it was for. A few boot camps, but I think they've got money from the government for like skills, something to do with skills. But they're going more like further across the country now, which is brilliant.
Yeah, I like that, because you hear of people paying, like, I've heard in London, the more expensive boot camps are getting over 10k now, which is a lot of money. It's a lot of money, and especially, I mean, I don't live down there anymore, obviously, but when I was living down there, like, rent is a lot. Especially, like, I mean, you're looking at paying for a two bed like 1400 a month, and that's not even in like an, I don't want to say where I lived wasn't a nice part of town, but I lived in Lewisham, and I think, you know, people that know London will know it's not the nicest place in the world, but it's not the worst. But you know, it's a lot of money when you're having to pay for that, and then potentially pay course fees of that amount. It's crazy.
And so
that,
not earn.
Yeah, exactly. Not earn as well. And the fact that the boot camp has got the money from you, like, that's fine. I mean, mine was great, so it was all right, and I didn't have to pay anything near that. But, you know, the boot camp's got the money from you. It doesn't matter to them. Whereas the way School of Code operates sounds awesome, because it's a partnership and they win when you win. So that's great.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I'd recommend it to anyone.
Yeah, that sounds good. I saw actually, I was going to ask you about this later, but it's come up now anyway. I saw you share something on LinkedIn about it with, they're opening up something for mentorships at the moment, right?
Yeah, so when you are a student of School of Code, each student is paired with a mentor who is someone who works in tech, so in the industry. My mentor was great. He works at Bravissimo, that just kind of, I think they're reaching out to people's networks to try and get enough for this next batch of students, because they're going to have I think it's about 190 across the country. So they're looking for 190 people who work in tech to be mentors. So I know a few people at Purple Bricks have signed up, and a few other people that I recognise like from the local like Birmingham tech scene. So if anyone's out there who fancies mentoring and helping other people, look up School of Code and tell them you'll be a mentor, because they'll really appreciate it, and it's just really good to do.
Cool. Links will be in the description for that. And I know over 60% of listeners from here are from the UK, so there are no excuses. I expect some signups via the Code of Career. Cool. In terms of doing your learning, how did you go about it? Obviously, there was the course, but you mentioned some online resources as well. Did you have like a kickstart before the course started?
Yeah. I'd already kind of started learning HTML and CSS because I was teaching that to the year sixes and year fives at school. And I kind of wanted to learn a bit more about that, so when they had their questions, I could try and like I knew what I was talking about. And that's kind of how I started getting back into it, really, because I was enjoying learning that and thinking, like, I just want to do this. So I then learned about the School of Code and just kind of absolutely ramped up learning as much as I could. So I completed the Code Academy HTML and CSS courses, started on the JavaScript one, because I just wanted to kind of try and get a bit of a head start, because I knew at some point it was really going to ramp up and get quite difficult. But I was really glad I had those. I also went to a Code Bar meetup in Birmingham. I think Code Bars across the country, but you just kind of take your laptop, tell them what you'd like to learn, and then they pair you up with someone who is a bit more experienced, who can help you and answer any questions. And the first one I went to was brilliant, because it was like an introduction to Git, and they were doing Hacktoberfest, and they like showed us, I had no experience of it before, they showed us like how to make a change, commit and push it up. So that was really useful.
That sounds good. And I definitely agree that, you know, if you're thinking about getting into a boot camp, it's definitely a good idea to teach yourself a bit of stuff to get a head start. And Git in particular, that is an interesting one to bring up, because I actually think the biggest thing I regret before getting a job was not learning Git absolutely inside out. I was so scared of it. I don't know why I had this weird idea in my head that I could like delete the whole of GitHub or something if I entered the wrong command. And like,
that would be impressive.
Yeah. So yeah, it's definitely don't be afraid to learn Git. There's a good course on Codecademy, but I think one of the best ways to learn Git is just working with someone like you say, like get yourself down to your local meetup and talk to an experienced dev, because it's one of those things, it's like Git's like riding a bike. Once you get it, like it stays with you. So it just takes a bit of learning, and it's helpful to have someone teach you basically just not to be totally intimidated by it. maybe I'm weird about Git, but nothing scared me. Anything else, even when I started working, honestly, Git merges and rebases scared me for so long. So I thought it was going to
still scare
prod.
Me.
Yeah.
I mean, no, they don't. I love it. I'm so confident.
Yeah, anyone listening out in our management of Purple Bricks, we're experts, and we're always confident in everything, and our code is always the best. would you say you would do anything differently in terms of the path you took to learn to code, or would you say there's anything in particular that you would emphasize to other people that are keen on learning?
Other than wishing I'd done it earlier, but then also I don't, because I loved teaching and have got I've made lifelong friends from having that job. So I wouldn't change that. But it would have been great to have done it earlier and kind of be a bit further along now. But equally, if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't have, School of Code was owned. I was on the third cohort, so that might not have been around. I could have wasted a lot of money on a boot camp. So I really don't think I would. The boot camp came at a time when I really needed it. So I just was so thankful for it then.
Brilliant. Yeah. I think it's always a good idea not to regret anything about learning to code in the paths we take. I sometimes regret getting into recruitment for a few years, but it taught me a lot, mainly that I don't like being shouted at and having to make 100 phone calls a day.
Yeah, exactly.
But it also introduced me, because it was technical recruitment, it introduced me to code as an option, really. Yeah. I was quite, I'd considered it as a, I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I was friendly with computer science people in uni, and I'd considered it, but I always thought it wasn't for me. Even though I was never bad at maths or anything like that. I just thought it was super complicated. And actually it's one of those things, it's really not that hard. Once you get the hang of it a little bit, it's just code. That's what I like to tell myself. It's just code. It's easy to write code. Figuring out the code to write is the harder bit.
Yeah, I think it's important to say it's not always easy. Sometimes I remember some points on the boot camp just sitting staring at it, thinking, I have got absolutely no idea what to do here. But then someone gives you a friendly little push in the right direction, and then it just clicks. So it is accessible, and I just remember thinking, I'd love to go and do that, and I'd love to get to that point where I could get a job, but that seems like such a million miles away. But it's actually really not, and it's so doable. So I think that's a really useful thing for people to know.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree, and I think it's not easy at all. I think I might have framed it a bit like that. There's definitely times where I'm the same, particularly stuff like learning Git, learning hooks. What weirdly took me ages was understanding JSX and React. I knew vanilla JavaScript, inside out at junior level, obviously. Couldn't get React for weeks, just didn't understand it. And it's really not a complex thing, concept for me now, but I just didn't get it at all. Yeah. And I felt so stupid. And then, it just clicks. But exactly like you say, you get a nudge in the right direction. And make sure that if you're learning right now, make sure you try and learn with someone. There's lots of ways you can do it. There's great communities on Twitter. You can find Discord communities, subreddits, if you can't find someone in person. But if you can do it in person, get down to your local code bar or JavaScript meetup.
Brilliant.
Yeah, It's I've heard, I think Copar's international as well, actually, because Liska, who was on the podcast a few weeks ago, she was saying that she learned a lot in from there on, because she's out in Berlin. She said it's really good out there. So there's great, the community for tech and particularly JavaScript is so good all over the world. So definitely don't be afraid to get yourself down to your local meetup. That's a regret I have, actually. I didn't get stuck into meetups early on because I thought it would be seen as like the noob and everyone would laugh at me.
Oh, shame you're not local. We could have all gone to Brum.js.
Yeah, I'll get myself down to Birmingham at some point and get down to Brum.js. I've heard good things, so I'll be keen to check it out, and need to make a return to Britain's Venice, as they call it.
Exactly. The
Silicon Canal. that'd be good. It might be a fraction warmer than it is here today as well. It's absolutely freezing. Anyway, how would you advise, and I think you'll have quite a unique perspective on this, being an educator in the past as well, if people are maybe getting to a point where they're leaving school or even leaving university, and they're keen to get into tech, what would you say to them in terms of like what the best path is to take at the moment?
I think I remember listening to you and Dan talk about this, and I really would not advise university if you wanted to kind of get into code, because like you said before, like it's just going to be stale so quickly, and you could spend 3 years and so much money learning how to do it, or you could do it in like, I don't know, 16 weeks and not spend any money. Obviously there are other like great points about university, like I didn't particularly use my degree, I don't think, but had the best time ever, and I've got like my best friends that I've had for 20 years or so, like got them from that, so I wouldn't change that time. But I wouldn't recommend uni for this job now. I'd kind of go boot camp or even self-learning. I think boot camp's great if you can find a good one, or if you can get onto School of Code, because they offer you the chance to like work in groups and do project work and have like the networking from that is brilliant. I just think like uni is losing its place for this kind of role.
Yeah, the education, the like higher education system needs to adapt a little bit. I think we're entering a weird point where, certainly in the UK, and I think 85% of listeners total are UK and US, and the problem's worse in the States because they don't have a government-run student loan service. As far as I'm aware, I think it's a lot of it's private, and their fees are even higher, particularly for their like out-of-state university. I'm not sure exactly what the details are, but they have it even worse than us. And I just think I was part of the nine grand fee generation here. So I had to pay 27K. Annoyingly, I was born 1 year too late for the cheaper one. So that stings. it's difficult because it's a lot of money and you have to pay 9% of your income over a certain threshold back. And I think it's definitely worth considering. It's hard to say from my side, like whether someone should go to uni or not. I think you can self-teach a lot, but
it's just down to the person, isn't it? What you want. Like if you're not desperate to get into a job and start learning and earning straight away, go to uni because you'll have a brilliant time and you probably get like more in depth. You'll get computer science and all that kind of stuff. But if like you just literally want to be able to get a job for it at the end of the day, there's better ways to do it.
Apprenticeships are a good route as well, and it's good to see that they seem to be being promoted a bit more. There's another callback to earlier in the backlog of Code of Career, but if you're curious about apprenticeships, the episode with Ethan Sumner, he did a DevOps apprenticeship. He did a DevOps apprenticeship, and it's quite weird speaking to someone who I believe was born in the 2000s, made me feel very old. He was saying about how the government policy has changed, and he gives some good advice on how you know you're selecting a good apprenticeship or not. So definitely worth listening to that if you're thinking about it as well. And would you say professionally, what do you think is the best way for someone to get that first job in tech?
I would go 100% networking. I think like you can always apply for jobs, can't you? And like just apply. But if someone can meet you and get a good idea of the kind of person you are and like you and kind of think, I keep my eye out for that person because like we get on and I feel like they really fit into the team. It's going to help you, isn't it? That's how Purple Bricks worked for me. And I think if you can do that either in person in meetups or on LinkedIn, I just think that's the absolute best way to do it. And I know it sounds scary, but it is just kind of like sending a message or just going up to a random person at a meetup and chatting. And it doesn't always have to be for getting a job. Like, I didn't talk to Tom because I thought he would get me a job. He just looked like a nice, friendly person.
Yeah.
It just ended up working out that way. That's what I'd suggest.
It's tough to take that plunge at a meetup, just go and talk to some random people. It's good to think of an icebreaker, like asking where the pizza is was my classic. that is the other bonus that we didn't mention about meetups, is there is generally a kind sponsor who is laying on a lot of pizza and drinks. Particularly when I was back down in London, and drinks as well, I was able to sample basically every major pizza place. I think Pizza Pilgrim is probably my favorite one, massive slices. So it's quite a good way to get free dinner as well, which is always handy. But yeah, absolutely. It's hard to go up and speak to that person, but I think weirdly, like, you got to get in your head, like, what's the worst thing that can happen? They say, like, go away, like, so what? Like, that's also not going to happen anyway, because they're at a meetup. They're there to be spoken to. So it's definitely worth doing. And LinkedIn is even easier, because someone, you don't even know if someone's rejected the invitation. And people are always happy. And as I always say on here, just drop me a message on LinkedIn if you have any questions, because my profile's in the description. I'm always open for a chat if people want advice. And you'll find in this industry, I think we can both attest to this, that devs are such friendly people and always trying to help each other out. And we're probably at the point now where we're both trying to return the favor to people that are trying to get into the industry.
Yeah. I think as well on LinkedIn, if you just send someone a message and like you seem genuinely interested in something that they've got to say, that really helps. If you kind of like know the company they're at, or you've looked at their company page and you've got a question, if you just say, like, I saw this and it looks really good, but I've got a question, like, why wouldn't they answer?
Yeah, exactly. It's just flattering. Like, you'd be so happy if someone messaged me saying, like, oh, I love what you're doing with the Code of Career, blah, 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 then I'd be really happy with it, and I'd be absolutely happy to reply. So there's no reason why people flooded. Would be... Yeah, I hope so. I don't think that many people listen, but hopefully it is. But yeah, definitely don't be afraid. It is scary to make the leap to sort of cold call almost, but you got to put your sales hat on a little bit and sell yourself. And it is tricky. You don't have to go full Jordan Belfort, but it doesn't help to try your best and put yourself out there. Yeah, put yourself out there, exactly. Nice. And I guess the subject of education has come up a few times, and we talked about higher education a bit, but bringing it back to school and primary schools as well in particular, I'm curious to get your opinion on this. What do you think the authorities and the government, not just in the UK, but generally, can do to develop an interest in STEM and tech careers for kids?
I just think there's so much. Like, things have started being put into place, like girls and boys are all kind of encouraged, and you have these like science weeks and I don't know, go on trips that involve STEM and things like that. And in 2014 the national curriculum changed, and the computing curriculum was changed to include like actual coding and computational thinking, and that was a really good step in the right direction, because before, like, it was just like learn Word, learn Excel,
yeah,
learn PowerPoint. And now it includes a lot of kind of like more codey type activities. And there's a great program called Scratch that a lot is done on. I think, though, that can get a bit relied on. And it's not so much at that age, especially now that I've left and can see how those skills are used. It really is the computational thinking that needs to be used. And from my experience, it's not taught probably that well or that often and in the right sort of way. So I don't know, I think getting specialist teachers in, because teachers have so much, they've got to be experts in every different subject. It's just not realistic that every teacher is going to be able to teach computational thinking in that way. And I know that's like wishful thinking. You can get a specialist teacher in to teach every child computational thinking in the country, but ideally that would happen, because then like you'd be able to handle things so much better. And like,
yeah, you know,
the curriculum just needs to really be improved, and teachers need helpful suggestions on what to teach.
Yeah, absolutely. It must be hard to have to kind of teach every single subject, and then suddenly the computational stuff comes in, and maybe, you know, particularly if, like my mum was a primary school teacher until 2 years ago, and she had to teach the kids Scratch in the last couple of years. But I imagine it's hard to have to learn that and then teach it. It's tricky. And I think obviously it's great if people learn that, but I agree with you, specialist teachers should come in. I mean, we had a specialist music teacher in primary school, I think, so I don't see why we couldn't have had, I mean, this would have been the early 2000s, but we, you know, having a specialist tech teacher come in, because obviously it's not just software. Getting kids interested in hardware and robotics and that kind of thing is a great route as well.
Yeah, I think possibly ideally in primary school it would happen more like secondary school, where you do have specialist teachers, like you have the ICT teacher in primary school, but then you don't have that one person that they're always with, and that's important for primary schools as well. So there's, I don't know, there's so much to it, and budgets.
Yeah, the big question. that's obviously the huge issue as well. And I think there's been steps in the right direction, but I think without getting political, I think one of the best things public policy wise it could be done, particularly in the UK, is investing in STEM, because the thing is, we have the vacancies, we have the industry, but we need to make sure that kids are learning the skills that they're actually going to be able to use. And I'm not one of those people that says, oh, we should get rid of this subject and that subject because you're never going to use it in the real world. I don't think that's the case, but I think teaching, if you could introduce some, and maybe they've changed it now, but if you could introduce some like basic programming into GCSE maths or something could be a good move. But I'm kind of spitballing there. I haven't stepped foot in a school in like 10 years, so I wouldn't.
You
I
go
wouldn't
and tell
really
them what
know.
To do.
Yeah. But I guess it all comes down to funding, doesn't it? I guess you're pretty powerless without the funding. And yeah, the best thing to do is fund, get kids into STEM, because it'll pay dividends down the line. But no one wants to be the one to spend the money because the money won't be generated for 20 years and then you're out of government. So
yeah, exactly.
Anyway, it's a tech podcast, not a politics podcast. And I bet that could go on for about 3 hours. But I mean, in terms of your career in particular in tech, if you could change anything about what you'd learn, and maybe also as well, kind of a double-headed question, what you're keen to learn in the future, what would you say that is? That's not the best phrase question.
I think I don't think I'd change anything about it. Like I said before, it would be nice to pick things up faster, and you know, when you like learn something and then you have to come, you face that problem again, I don't know, 2 or 3 months down the line, and you think, I had that thing once. It'd be great to just remember it, wouldn't it? Pick things up, remember more. But I think in the future, I kind of just want to like polish my abilities, I think, more, work more independently, not having to reach out to people as much. I'd really like to pick up GraphQL at some point soon, because I feel like that is getting more widely used. I know like we've started using it at Purple Bricks, not in my team, but at some point that would be cool. And I remember in School of Code, I really enjoyed the back end part of things too, but then I feel like there's so much to learn on the front end. How would you manage to nail all that?
Such
and
a
back
rabbit
end?
Hole. Yeah, it's crazy. I can't, like, being a full, being a legit full stack developer, I can't imagine how difficult that is. What back end stuff were you using?
We did Express servers, Node, Postgres databases. I really enjoyed it. Our main project was this like month long project, and I pretty much did the whole back end for that. And really liked it. I wouldn't want to go complete back end. Like I enjoy the front end as well, but I want to kind of start a little personal project and have a little go with AWS Amplify, but I'm just slightly scared to get started.
it's quite easy to use Amplify. It's funny you say that, because I'm working on, it's become a massive running joke on this podcast now, but I'm working on the podcast website, but it's changed scope a little bit. More will be revealed, but the project has massively like probably 10x'd in size.
Oh, really?
And as a result, I'm needing to use some other stuff. And I've been sort of setting up, experimenting with Amplify, and it's pretty user-friendly, and you're able to get some pretty cool stuff going right out of the box. So I definitely recommend it. And AWS has got quite a generous free tier system, which is always handy, because you don't want to accidentally run up a bill.
No.
I definitely remember to set the billing alarms. If any listeners are trying out AWS, you can set a billing alarm, and it's the first thing you should do.
I'm going to come knocking on your door then when I get stuck with it. Thanks.
Yeah, no, feel free, absolutely. It's AWS Amplify is a great one to get stuck into. It plugs in nicely. Just as I said, the billing alarm is a big one. I went, I got on a flight and forgot about it and left something running. And it wasn't too bad. It was like 25 quid, but I was pretty annoyed with myself. Cool. So that all sounds really great. And I think people will have gathered a lot from your episode. So that sounds awesome. You've talked a little bit about a side project. I don't know how much that's under wraps at the moment. What are you working on at the moment? Anything to promote?
Nothing particularly. That side project is literally just kind of for fun and just making something. I can tell you what it is if you're interested. It's just something.
Yeah, definitely.
My partner Laura plays Red Dead Redemption, and she like likes to keep track of her side missions and things. So she'll be like logging how many of the animal hides she's collected and things like that. And whenever she plays it, she like writes on a notepad and then puts the pen down and draws all over the settee. So my plan is to make something where it's like an app. She can leave it on. She can like tally up everything on there, and then our sofa will be pen mark free.
Oh, fantastic. That is a real way of using tech to combat a real world problem.
World problem.
Yeah. Are you planning on making it basically cross platform? So like mobile and web, or what's the stack?
Just web app, I think. Yeah.
And would that be React like we use at PB, or?
I'd like Next.js, I think.
Nice. Yeah, I've been trying to do a couple of personal projects with that, and it's Next is like, it's suspiciously easy to use out of the box,
really,
is how
like
I describe it.
I prefer it to just normal React.
Yeah, I do as well. I don't know if it's my imagination, but I think it's much faster.
Yeah, I don't know. I just love the pages.
Yeah, and there's just generally less boilerplate and that sort of thing. It just it just works, which is always good. As well, have you got any? I guess the big one to shout out for you would be School of Code. Looking for mentors, but is there a new cohort coming as well?
Yeah, there's a new cohort starting, I think, on the 15th of November. So they're like, all the students know they are a student there, but they're still looking for, like, I think maybe the last handful of mentors. So I suppose anyone who listens who would like to mentor, I don't know what the restrictions are with where you need to be, but preferably someone who is like in the industry who is able to help. I think it's something like, if you can give up half an hour a week, it's on the student to like contact you and say what help or assistance they'd need. But if anyone would like to sign up, they'd be very grateful.
Brilliant. That sounds good. And that's in Birmingham. I was reading before we came on, it's like Birmingham, Manchester, and London as well.
Yeah, I think like Birmingham, Manchester, London. Oh, this could be wrong. And like possibly like northeast and southwest.
Yeah,
like I'd really Newcastle. Have to double check that.
I do remember thinking they haven't made it north of Hadrian's Wall yet. That is the only one. I need to get up here into the chilly, very, very far north. but yeah, that Yeah, that all sounds great. So thanks so much for joining me today. It was really great to hear about how you've got into code, and always nice to speak with another career changer as well, because nice to have a previous life before the code. So that's awesome.
Cool. Thanks very much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, my pleasure. And thanks much as well to you, listener, for checking out The Coder Career. There's new podcasts every Monday morning, assuming there's no issues me uploading, which that often is. But check us out on, obviously, all major podcast platforms, YouTube, and also stay tuned for a very exciting announcement in December/the new year. It depends how quickly I can code, so hold on to your hats. It could be quite exciting, slash maybe not that exciting, again depending on how cool it is what I code. So on that note, thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next Monday. Have a great week.